Ever thought it would require a Mechanicus brain remapping to cram more 40k into your day, craving a little more grim dark horror when everyone's asleep on Christmas Day, but you're stuck far from home with nothing but a phone? Tacticus could be your saviour. I'd always imagined 40k mobile games to be a slow, unenjoyable grind. When Tacticus approached me, I found myself surprised that after spending many hours with the game and early on my wife saying to me, "Are you going to do any more script tonight or just play that game?" that it was a lot more fun than I had anticipated. Undoubtedly, with games like Tacticus, there's nowhere to hide when it comes to what the game style is. It's a pick-up-and-play-anywhere mobile game, which undoubtedly has its pros and cons, but its main positive being addictive, stylized tactical combat. The gameplay loop is enjoyable enough that it's kept me engaged for many hours, and the amount of microtransaction restrictions surprisingly minimal in today's gaming era. Plus, it benefits, of course, from the 40k aesthetic and characters. They do offer regular sales and many ways to play that unlock free perks like the current Advent calendar. And there are a variety of different modes, from the campaign to arena, guild, and onslaught, where in the latter, you're fighting waves of increasing difficulty for solid rewards. The campaigns can be played as a mirror also, where you get to be the Xenos for a change. On the con side, like any free-to-play, prices for unlocks are quite objectively high, but as far as the base content goes, I haven't found myself locked behind any paywall. Scaling expectations, Tacticus is a game I tend to play when I have a spare 10-30 minutes in an hour in and around my daily life. The story aspect of the game is unfortunately minimal, making this stronger would, I think, add a lot more to the game, although the Eldar campaign does improve upon this. There can be odd balancing choices also, with some difficulty spikes where you have generally progressed well through a campaign and then find a level which outscales you, having to grind and level up your squad. But this is not atypical of tactical RPGs though. Unlocking new squads can also take some time, but having said all that, Tacticus is genuinely an enjoyable way to pass time, and just this month they're adding Mechanicus characters, which I find myself actually motivated to want to try them out. Tacticus offers a rewarding gameplay cycle of unlocking progression and achievement draped in a 40k veneer. It's worth a look in, especially when you consider this is a free-to-play game. We all have some downtime over the Christmas period, so check out Tacticus for yourself using my link below or the QR code on screen now. All of your interactions and support help me in the channel, so I greatly appreciate this as always and into the future. Speaking of downtime and working in between daily chores, let us turn to the next of the worst 40k jobs. In the shadowy recesses of the Imperium, where despair and decay fester far from the radiant glow of the Emperor's light, a grim reality for billions of human citizens is laid bare. Despite the unending war of the galaxy, not all of humanity are faced with a constant battle against alien horrors that would seek to devour them. Despite the towering monuments and symbols of power that adorn the Imperium, the deepest corners of human existence, particularly within the sprawling hive cities, are shrouded in a veil of eternal despair. The anonymous forgotten souls within endure lives defined by unrelenting hardship, ceaseless toil, and unyielding suffering that are in many ways just as abhorrent and mind-breaking as the worst Xenos dungeons. The very heart of humanity's galactic dominion bears the weight of its own contradictions, creating breeding grounds for discontent, treachery, and the surrender of beleaguered souls to the malevolent whispers emanating from the ethereal realm beyond. As always, when I intro this series, it's crucial to acknowledge that within the Imperium, the term jobs is something of a misnomer, because for most roles, they are more accurately described as worker assignments. The nature of these assignments varies depending on the world one will inhabit. In realms like Ultramar, a degree of independence may exist for human citizens, but for many, especially those trapped upon hive worlds, the autonomy to choose one's path is a luxury reserved for the privileged few. The lack of standardized currency only further complicates civilizations throughout the galaxy. While hive worlds might utilize credits, other systems employ local currencies, and feudal planets will resort to basic barter supplemented by rudimentary coinage. What's referred to generally as the Throne Gelt stands as one of the few quasi-universal units of value, primarily employed by itinerant figures such as Imperial guilds, rogue traders, inquisitors, and other Imperial officials navigating the vast expanse of the galaxy. But regardless of the compensation, ordinary citizens will seldom possess the luxury of choosing their own life's trajectory. Education, if it exists at all, extends only to the basics of law, religion, civil order, and industrial operation, most of which will not come from attending centres for education, but more likely accumulated from life experience. Most individuals inherit survival knowledge, and this will naturally filter into their role as part of the organic structure that constitutes human society in M41. In the eyes of the Imperium, humans are little more than statistics, raw material flesh matter, dust motes in the vast expanse of its dominion, and used as another might use raw materials like ore, gas, liquid, to be processed along with other consumables and later whatever base necessity products they are able to be fabricated into. We're always told that in the 41st millennium there is only war. I always do my best to remind all that the true horror of the 41st millennium lies not in the military service to the Imperium, but the mind-numbing drudgery, pervasive lack of hope, and resigned acceptance of banality that is imposed upon and pervades the lives of its citizens. Given the extended state of decay for the Imperium's empire, this may well be in part by design. Many who lead such lives will welcome death when it arrives, while others mumble about the inherent madness of their own kind, whilst also being acutely aware that they lack the power or knowledge to really do anything about it. The Imperium bears as much responsibility for the extreme suffering endured by trillions of ordinary citizens across the galaxy as much as those who would seek its obliteration. In this grim reality, the nightmare of humanity in the 41st millennium unfolds, its suffocating autocratic structure steadily rotting civilization from the inside out and perpetuating a cycle of suffering that echoes throughout the very core of the Imperium itself. Lastly, as always, I appreciate your time here this year and support on the channel. If you enjoy the video, please appease my Lord and Master Algo by contributing a like, share the video with friends, comment to tell me what future horrors of the 40k galaxy we should discuss. There are many roles of indentured servitude within the Imperium of Man. Life as a navigator's servant within the closed estates upon Terra may seem beneficial, desirable even, and for some, they may consider it so, comparative to their own existence. But many cannot truly appreciate what a nightmarish existence is endured by those held by contract to the Navigator households. Navigator's servants' lives will be typically characterized by perpetual fear, demanding service, and a confusing daily life with endless unknowns. Navigators are strange, esoteric individuals within the Imperium, both essential and simultaneously seen as pariahs. Their origins are unclear, but however they came to be in the dark past of human civilization, they emerged to be both blessed and cursed, with the ability to navigate the treacherous currents of the warp and also hold a position of immense power within the Imperium of Mankind. Yet, within the confines of their secretive and largely closed estates, their servants can find themselves living in a hopeless damnation that mirrors the bleakness of the galaxy itself. The closed estates of the Navigators are enigmatic fortresses hidden amongst the sprawling urban landscape of Terra. These estates are shrouded in mystery and guarded by the most loyal and zealous agents of the Navigator houses. They are impenetrable to not only the common citizen within the Imperium, but also to many Imperial officials. The Navigator houses hold such unchallenged power within the Imperium that what occurs within the walls of their estates and the vast subterranean levels below is best left unquestioned. But of course, rumours persist about all manner of perversions and illegal activities that take place within the confines of Navigator houses. How true all of these are is, of course, uncertain and totally speculative. But one of the reasons believed as to why they are so secretive is due to their thousands of years of inbreeding to maintain their genetic line and preserve their ability and status as navigators. Once a servant is admitted within these walls, they will become ensnared in a labyrinthine web of servitude and terror, never to leave again. The first thing one would note upon entering would be the immense beauty and extravagant expense of the lavish estates, something that only those who wield the power and indispensable status of the navigators could hope to achieve. But alongside this is an uncomfortable air, the pervasive atmosphere of secrecy and paranoia. The very nature of navigator households' work demands absolute confidentiality. They will often be embroiled in the exploration and acquisition of forbidden knowledge and ancient secrets, innumerable power struggles within the Imperium which they may try to leverage to their own gain, and many more strange oddities which may be guarded within the darkened depths of these estates. Any breach of trust by the servant class would be met with swift and merciless retribution, something that any would-be servants, and especially new members, are constantly reminded of, instilling in them a fear so palpable that it becomes a constant companion in their daily lives. Navigators themselves are unpleasant to be around for ordinary humans, not least because their bodies have been so mutated by the touch of the warp, with their eyes replaced by the all-seeing third eye that allows them to pierce the veil of reality. And so to serve these beings is to live in a state of awe, but also terror. For navigators are known for their very unstable moods, which may in part be influenced by the chaotic currents they navigate through the Imperium and how this impacts upon their humanity. Any who are retained in the employ of navigator households must learn to read the signs, anticipate the shifting whims of their masters, and react with absolute obedience, because failure to do so could result in punishment that ranges anything from physical scourging to banishment into the darkest corners of the estate, where unspeakable horrors may await at the hands of the more twisted members of households who have been left to indulge in whatever they desire, so long as they stay out of sight and out of mind. The estates themselves are vast, foreboding structures that can seem to swallow whole the uninitiated. The architecture undoubtedly inspired by the Gothic era of the Imperium, but also perhaps the strange visions and curious experiences navigators have felt. As you progress down into the bowels of navigator households, but especially on Terra, their seemingly endless corridors twist and turn, becoming quite literally a maze, leading ignorant servants into the more forgotten chambers and hidden catacombs where what appear to be ancient rituals could be performed, or undoubtedly even more bizarre activities. In fact, it's strange how we recently spoke about Cormora, and the darkened passages and closed depths of navigator estates may very well be likened to the depravity seen in the capital of the Dark Xenos. But this is taking place upon Terra itself, which is to the uninitiated servants so incomprehensibly offensive that this alone could cause them to have some kind of mental break. It's worth remembering that for those who pass into service within navigator houses will likely be coming from a more privileged class of servant than just the lowest commoners. Having a family member enter the status of service would certainly be something to gain your family status among the bureaucratic members of the Administratum and Adeptus Terra, those who keep the cogs of the Imperium turning at all levels. The point being, those who have lived lives on Terra will undoubtedly have seen sights, seen the raw capacity of humankind, and what it's capable of inflicting upon each other. But little would prepare them for the sights, sounds, and expectations they would be exposed to upon entering the walls of the Navigator estate. Because Navigators, by their nature, are beings who maintain a constant relationship with the warp. Their servants are similarly subjected to the disorientating effects of the Immaterium, experiencing hallucinations, whispers that seem to come from the void itself, and feeling this oppressive weight of the warp pressing down on their minds indirectly every single day. Many will go mad within the estates, their sanity unravelling like a fragile thread in the hands of the malevolent forces, pulling at the loose threads of their mind, slowly pulling it apart, hour by hour, day by day, month by month, until eventually it unravels. And navigator servants are far from just being assistants or caretakers. They can also be participants in whatever curious events the navigators wish to partake upon. These could be rituals or rites, or really anything you can imagine. It's certainly possible that many would see servants offering their life or whatever whim their masters desire. So long-standing servants may well be marked by the scars of these rituals, living with the constant dread of being called upon to contribute to whatever rites their masters believe will sustain them. Within their halls, the presence of Xenos artifacts and forbidden technologies adds another layer of horror to the servants' lives, because again, remembering for us these are curiosities, but for humans of Imperial society entering into Navigator estates, they will suddenly be faced with seeing things that they have learned are the epitome of evil, the most heretical things, and these are displayed with audacious disregard for the laws and restrictions of the Imperium. Navigators, in their quest for mastery over the warp, will often delve into realms deemed heretical by the Imperium, and servants may find themselves handling eldritch devices, studying forbidden tomes, dark Eldar puzzles, again perverse rites and rituals that could involve any manner of strange physical tortures or other activities with the condemned, or each other, and even participating in experiments that defy the laws of nature. Psychic manipulation is another insidious form of perversion within the Navigator households, for Navigators with their psychic abilities heightened by the warp have the power to manipulate the minds of their servants, and this mental coercion extends beyond mere obedience, as Navigators may indulge in any number of sadistic games, forcing servants to experience hallucinations, nightmares, twisted fantasies, and living these out against one another. The line between reality and delusion becomes increasingly blurred, leaving the servants in a perpetual state of psychological torment. And very obviously, the consequences for ordinary humans indulging in such forbidden knowledge can be highly unpredictable, often catastrophic, leading to mutations, madness, or the awakening of ancient evils, or even at the lower end of the scale, the destruction of the moral self, and leaving servants riven with guilt and humiliation to such a scale they may disappear into darkness, never to be seen again. Beyond the walls of the estates, the wider Imperium is largely ignorant of such affairs, or even if they are somewhat aware, they choose to ignore it, for the galaxy remains a dangerous and unforgiving place. Not least because Navigators are able to shield what may well be detected by other psychers through their own abilities. Whilst servants within Navigator houses are shielded from the harsh reality of constant war, the encroaching threats of Xenos and Chaos, the merciless grip of the Imperial bureaucracy, unfortunately it also leaves them vulnerable to the whims of their Navigator masters. For the estates are insular realms where those in servitude are trapped between looming shadows of the warp and the ever watchful eyes of their masters. Being forced to live in the isolation imposed by the closed estates as a Navigator servant is truly one of the worst jobs for humans within the Imperium. They are the playthings for those who exist within an environment unchecked by laws or any moral codes, where perversions can thrive unchecked. Navigator households are breeding grounds for decadence and moral decay, and those unlucky servants unwittingly finding themselves in what they thought would be an excellent position are in fact ensnared in a web of secrecy and fear, finding themselves trapped in a cycle of pain, intolerable service and perversion. Their lives are a grotesque malformation of what humans should aspire to, and even their fellow servants are likely to be broken enough to be anything other than a danger to newcomers. Far from being what could appear to be a haven, Navigator estates are a prison for those who serve, and are very much a microcosm of the grim darkness that pervades the galaxy they navigate. Now, we have previously discussed the role of general Imperial miners on this series before, in part 2, I believe. However, that was specifically focused upon those who were situated upon mining worlds. There are, of course, other ways minerals are to be extracted, and in fact there is a specific variation of this that we look at the end of this episode. Many hive cities became what they are by the period of M30 because colonists chose a site for them which was optimal upon new worlds to be colonized by humanity, and this very often could mean deep, very rich mineral deposits that could be significant enough to last for not just generations, but indeed hundreds, if not thousands of years, and that once mines have begun, returning to the surface to dig down becomes inefficient. And in fact, you see some worlds of the Imperium where the entire society is focused upon this, where their entire cities are actually underground and they continually strip mine through the planet itself. And in some cases, this actually destabilizes the planet. But unfortunately, descending to mine in an underhive is quite a different ballgame to mining on a designated world in an open mining situation. For the descent alone into the bowels of a hive city represents a harrowing realm that eclipses the already grim conditions of mining on a typical Imperial planet. This is largely due to the fact that the environment itself is so typically hostile. A labyrinthine crumbling infrastructure with dilapidated tunnels, forgotten catacombs, the air barely breathable, thick with pollutants and toxins that have run down from the hive above over centuries, which remember is supporting billions of human citizens, industry, fabrication and so forth. An underhive has many centuries, if not millennia, of layers of decay, lawlessness, unrelenting darkness. It's truly a crucible of despair that amplifies the hardships faced by its unfortunate citizens. And all of this makes it an extremely hazardous environment for any form of life. The lack of proper ventilation and safety measures exposes workers to constant health hazards, respiratory issues, debilitating diseases, even with proper equipment, far worse, of course, losing limbs and being sheared in half, crushed under rocks, is undoubtedly the natural order of things. And because it is so severely hazardous, very often penal workers may be used, forced down here for permanent duties that are ultimately terminal. And whilst Imperial mining planets have their fair share of harsh conditions, they typically adhere to some vague safety standards, but more out of a desire to maintain production efficiency than worrying about the workers themselves. Ventilation and protective gear are more likely to be provided, mitigating immediate health risks to a certain extent. But underhive mining is often made worse by the fact that it exists in a territory largely beyond the eyes of Imperial authorities. No care is really being given to those sent to such duties because the hive itself can produce such a massive quantity of the raw material of humans that there is always an endless supply of those who are disposable enough to be thrown down below and made to work. And this environment is generally entirely unmonitored, because few Imperial officials would willingly descend here. Even those who run the mining guild will likely not actually descend into the depths. This means there is extremely minimal oversight or any kind of regulation, thus allowing unscrupulous overseers, gang leaders, to exploit workers with impunity and often all manners of violence, of course, to enable them to skim off some of the profitable value there. This absence of governance contributes to a cycle of exploitation and misery, and the underhive is already a lawless expanse where crime and anarchy reign supreme. Gangs vie for control over resources, contracts, leading to constant skirmishes and bloodshed. Miners not only contend with the physical challenges of extraction, but also the constant threat of violence from rival factions. And while crime may exist on Imperial mining worlds, the levels of lawlessness is generally much more controlled and ordinary. Security forces and Imperial authorities maintain a semblance of order, reducing the risk of miners becoming embroiled in violent local conflicts, but inevitably some corruption exists. But there is at least a better chance of miners not being subjected to entirely unchecked exploitation and violence. The underhive is an entirely different picture. Sometimes those assigned to such duties could be termed expendable extractors, for this is a job so wretched and soul-crushing that its labourers are almost entirely expendable by design through the combination of environmental hazards, lawlessness, lack of oversight and pervasive hopelessness, which makes it a significantly more bleak life than is seen among the already harsh conditions on standard mining worlds. But their daily life is generally just a struggle for survival, or in many cases attempting to escape, because they endure a job which saps away their humanity, tasked with extracting valuable resources from the underbelly of their desolate homeworlds. These workers will navigate a nightmarish existence fraught with danger, despair, and the ever-looming spectre of death. The huge, hollowed-out caverns excavated over centuries eventually will narrow into tunnels, but these are not designed pathways, they are merely the veins of the hive city itself. They will be slick with filth, grime, the stench of toxic decay. As workers descend deeper down into the tunnels, ever narrowing, the air becomes almost partially viscous. It's so heavily saturated with particles, and the ever-oppressive weight of the hive city above pressing down claustrophobically upon them. Equipped with archaic and poorly maintained mining equipment handed down from generations long past and made to just function as best they can, tools that are corroded by time and neglect, only serving as a reminder for the disregard shown to those who perform such roles. Wielding pickaxes elsewhere and decrepit drilling devices, they toil for endless hours, miners' bodies contorted and twisted by the perpetual strain of their labour. Many of the weak and old will succumb to exhaustion, collapsing against the rock, taken off, no doubt, to the corpse guilds of the Underhive. Injuries are of course entirely commonplace, limbs crushed beneath falling debris, burns and chemical malformation by falling into the toxic waste all around them, or indiscriminately maimed by malfunctioning equipment. Yet there is no respite, for the Hive guilds and indirectly the Imperium demands their resource tithe. The Hive cities deploy their most disposable resource in the form of human extractors to pay this toll with blood and sweat. And unlike Imperial mining worlds, which have generally better planning, in the depths far below the foundations of a Hive city, the ever-increasing scale of the tunnels dug out by hand are then often prone to collapse. Walls weakened by centuries of exploitation can crumble at any moment, burying the workers alive. And such events will pass largely without commentary. Recovery efforts may take place, but even with significant collapse events, it's unlikely any help would be redistributed. And then, despite all of this, there is worse to come. For perhaps the most insidious aspect of the extractor's existence is the ever-looming menace of the bizarre and the varied creatures that dwell in the uncharted depths. We've talked, of course, in the past about the Amble, but there are other strange insectoid grub-like horrors as workers delve deeper into the Hive's underbelly. They may disturb rogue mutants who are the twisted remnants of forgotten experiments or grotesque amalgamations of flesh and machinery that hunger for the taste of humankind. Extractors fight not only against the unyielding rocks and minerals they extract, but also against the chemical hazards of the Underhive that continuously pour down upon them. Also, the grotesque denizens who dwell within, poorly armed and in varying states of mutated horror, that can easily overwhelm gangs of miners. Some crews may bring along untrained militias who are recruited from the lost and the damned, who find their way into the Underhive to stand as a line of defence against potential horrors. But any mining crews exploited by the Underhive gangs may be able to get some assistance there to ensure that the lucrative prices gained by those at the top of such operations are maintained. Similarly, Hive guilds. But the truth, of course, is that for those who are designated as expendable extractors, their lives exist on the fringes of the Imperium's attention, which is saying something when you consider most civilians already are barely cared for. Their sacrifices are ignored by those who reap the benefits of their toil. They are nameless faces, anonymous humanoid forms condemned to a life of suffering in the very worst depths of Imperial Hive worlds, remaining forever entirely expendable. It may not come to mind immediately as a worst role, because very often anyone in a higher position within the Imperium will exist with considerably greater comfort and freedom than most citizens. Yet this does not obscure the reality of one of the most disturbing ethical dilemmas faced by civil servants in the Imperium, whether they are aware of it or not. This is for those tasked in the role of tithe enforcer. To be clear, there is no really specifically designed title for this that I could find, because undoubtedly they are some ambiguous member of the Administratum, or above them in the Adeptus Terror. But ultimately, somebody has to make these decisions. For their role is to impose authority upon the worlds of the Imperium, their orders will relate to what is a considerably sinister occupation, steeped in moral ambiguity and macabre practices, which exemplifies the extremes to which humanity is pushed in the service of the Imperium. For they are tasked with managing and overseeing the tithes exacted from Imperial worlds, demanded by the Imperium for the sustenance of its vast war machine, including not only material resources, but also human lives. It is within this darkest facet of their duty, in the selection and delivery of the Emperor's most precious resource, the souls of the faithful, to which the greatest moral millstone is placed around the neck of those assigned to managing tithes of Imperial planets. Amid the already cold and calculating bureaucracy of the Imperium stand the agents of the Adeptus Administratum, the colossal administrative body responsible for the organisation, collection of tithes across countless worlds, and the general order of the Imperium. Their role extends beyond mere logistics. They become the custodians of an ethically fraught system that demands a steady stream of sacrifice for the greater good. And this is where one of the most morally distressing aspects of the administratum comes into play, that role of the tithe enforcer's job, the creation of the tithe grade. The Imperium, in its unyielding need for resources, has devised this grading system to categorise the value of each world's contribution. This system extends to the human populace, with individuals being assessed and assigned a grade based on their perceived worth to the Imperium's war effort. The size of the tithe is going to depend on the type of world to which it is applied, but also to the historical status of that world. Some planets which originally were Imperial Loyalist aligned during the Heresy maybe didn't come down on one side too strongly one way or the other, and in the aftermath of the Heresy felt so indebted they are now placed at the highest tithe grade level, likely forever. But a tithe can be any form of material. It can be food, weapons, minerals, but also people. Despite the number of agencies that are tracking the tithes of the worlds, the sheer size of the Imperium and the difficulty of warp travel and communication makes this an incredibly time-consuming process, especially when it comes to the collection. This is also excessively confusing, inefficient, and sees a regular catalogue of errors. The lowest tithe grades are going to be reserved for the most destitute, marginalised worlds, right out on the rim of galactic space, or those who have seen devastating campaigns scour them. For the individuals who live upon such worlds, they are marked for the most harrowing of lives. Because administrators must make these decisions acting as cold arbiters, determining which individuals will be sacrificed ultimately at the altar of the Galactic Imperium of Humanity. The criteria for such selections will vary considerably, but the dilemma faced by those tasked with gauging such decisions is exacerbated by the knowledge that these sacrifices are not always made in the name of necessity, but often to just maintain control, and very often this is through fear. The Imperium thrives and exists on the submission of its subjects, and on worlds which are becoming destabilized, procedures can be enacted to ensure the systematic sacrifice of its own citizens. So by increasing the tithe grade of, say, Imperial Guard, this will serve as a brutal reminder for the consequences of disobedience. Because on many Imperial planets, similarly to Astartes, it could actually be generations before those who lead a planet actually really encounter the Imperium. And this is something, again, people don't always understand about the Imperium. There are worlds which see constant trade, constant interaction with the Imperium, and especially if they house, say, Astartes or specific Imperial Guard forces. But there are other planets which may rarely encounter the Imperium at all, and they will only come into focus when they become problematic, and the arrival of Imperial administrators or whatever bureaucratic order may not in fact be immediately recognised by those on the planet. Of course, failure to do so is going to have fairly significant consequences, and we have seen this actually in some novels. But that's why for some worlds it can actually become quite easy for a planet to be destabilized when it has no real needs to do so, because it may be, like I say, many generations before they really encounter some authority figure from the Imperium. So this idea of a galactic Imperium out there that they never see and never interact with can become quite ambiguous and disconnected. They may start even to fundamentally forget really what it is and why are they sending off all these resources? Why are they sending people out into space? To what end? What's the purpose? We never see this thing that's out there ambiguously. And this is why we may see a planet have the confidence, the audacity to try and break away from the Imperium of mankind, because they forget the scale of it, they forget the power of it. And again, a perfect example of this is Krieg. Krieg decided that they would attempt to try and break away from the Imperium. And very often us, with our understanding of what the Imperium is, the understanding of the power, the scale, the galactic immensity of the Imperium of mankind, we would say, well, what's the point? Why even bother? Why even attempt to rebel against the Imperium? You're never going to be successful. We say that understanding the power of the Imperium, but to a planet who barely has any interaction with them, it seems entirely plausible. And that's why the administratum and the tithe enforcers can use the tithe grade as a means to maintain some sense of order on planets which are showing signs of destabilizing. Because this is a brutal reminder of the consequences of disobedience. It reminds the citizens of a planet that they are beholden to something else out there, something that's telling them, complete your shifts and work duties, life can be tolerable, and largely without major problems, major incidents, major wars. or at least as far as they would know otherwise. But if you create disruption, if you push back against your security forces, you may see all those youthful members of your entire HAB sector disappear overnight and never seen again. One might imagine that being entirely detached from worlds and planets of the Imperium, the humans of the Administratum might see these as simply numbers, and undoubtedly there are bureaucrats of the Administratum that are so desensitized to such considerations that this is partially true. But there will also be those who would loathe such duties, that with their role in perpetuating this cycle, they're far from immune to the psychological toll exacted by their actions. And I think that's how I choose to see it, because the psychological burden is only further intensified by the religious fervour that permeates the Imperium. Again, you have to remember how Imperial citizens, members of the Administratum, are brought up in their life. Like all citizens, any members of the Administratum, they're going to be indoctrinated with the Imperial cult's dogma, which teaches that sacrifice for the Emperor is the highest form of devotion. And that twisted ideology compels them to rationalise the horror they inflict on their own people as divine duty, blurring the lines between morality and fanaticism, which is, when you consider it, a truly abhorrent, twisted mentality. We might imagine a speculative scenario whereby an Imperial planet rich in manufacturing and fabrication with a solidly industrious population has long contributed to the Imperial tithe without exception. But an unexpected catastrophic event strikes the Hive World. A devastating warp breach, for whatever reason, erupts within the heart of the primary Manufactorum district. The resulting breach not only cripples the Manufactorums, but also engulfs a significant portion of the population, corrupting and spreading nightmarish warp contamination. As the reports are sent through to the Administratum of this disaster, undoubtedly some Imperial specialists will be deployed. Inquisitors, maybe Sororitas, Imperial Guard, even Astartes. But their role is only in quelling such disruption, destroying the threat, ensuring the stability of the world. Disastrous as such a situation would be, it's still salvageable. The more significant weight of burden is in fact placed upon the Administratum officials overseeing the tithe, because the Manufactorums that were so vital in supplying the Imperium's war machine are now ruined. Given the devastation, they have to choose between reporting this diminished output truthfully, risking censure from their own higher authorities, or exaggerating the remaining productivity to meet the expected tithe levels. The latter option could lead to more severe consequences if discovered, potentially imperiling the Hive City further. Yet they would also likely consider how reporting these details is going to impact themselves versus potentially salvaging vast numbers of human lives. The administrator will be attempting to decide, in cooperation with planetary officials, who will receive priority in evacuation efforts, along with how to secure remaining manufactorums to enable surviving workers to salvage some production capabilities. Or do they focus upon rescuing the Imperial citizens unaffected by the warp breach in surrounding areas, even if they're not directly contributing to the tithe? Is it more efficient to just shut down, cut off that area, and declare it lost? Not to mention the fact that very likely any Inquisitor who sees this disaster as a potential heretical threat is going to have an impact as well. Could they demand the complete purging of the affected areas, including those who have been partially afflicted but potentially salvageable? For a tithe administrator, this is also a highly difficult, dangerous decision, negotiation to have to make, for they will be forced to decide whether to comply with any such requests or resist in the greater interests of the tithe, and then potentially risking accusations of heresy themselves. So there are many complex factors and pressures on these tithe administrators. But the scenarios and possibilities when it comes to the Imperial tithe administrators are endless. I always imagine an Imperial planet sending an urgent request for aid, a planet of billions who require immediate assistance to a threat they have identified in all good time. While the world is saved, the disruption and devastation leads to them becoming heavily indebted to the Imperium and behind on meeting their tithe demands. It is then the role of those in charge of ensuring tithes are met to enforce any further restrictions, which could lead to massive changes and sacrifices to be made for potentially billions of citizens. The disconnected apathy that many in this role must use to approach things only symbolises acutely the moral decay within the Imperium. Duty born of necessity, ruthlessness as a matter of course, and for those who retain any moral compass, their bleak job forces them to confront the inherent contradictions within a regime that demands sacrifice at any cost. In the darkest corners of the 41st millennium, this role truly embodies the nightmares that plague the hearts and minds of those consigned to serve the Imperium in its unrelenting pursuit of survival, at any cost, no matter how morally questionable. It's always interesting for me with these worst job episodes to try and consider what roles we select, because very often the roles humanity's civilians face in M41 can be far more banal than they can be bizarre. But in some ways, this is curiously just as horrifying. I don't think things always have to be this immense dramatic flair to be interesting. I think the ordinary human civilian lives is something people are fascinated by when it comes to the galaxy of 40k. And so lastly, another role today which crosses over between something of a minor and something of those we had previously discussed in the role of the shipbreakers, those tasked with cutting apart vessels in the extremely high-risk ship graveyards of the untold numbers of systems throughout the galaxy. Very often, there are roles which overlap, and very often, there are roles which are not necessarily stated, but are very logically plausible. So this last role today is a speculative one of my own imagining, but I think it absolutely fits the existing roles and structures we understand when it comes to civilian industrial responsibilities for the Imperium. Something so perilous, so inherently dangerous, that only the bravest dare to undertake it. Void harvesters. As denizens of the cosmos struggle for survival amidst these ceaseless conflicts and cosmic upheavals, these intrepid individuals embark on a treacherous odyssey, navigating the darkest corners of the galaxy to extract highly coveted, elusive resources. While the rewards can be substantial, the working conditions are extraordinarily dangerous, and more than enough to break those not suited to the task. Such individuals may well be working under the orders of rogue traders or trading guilds within a system sent out to secure what they can, where no one else would dare to tread. The extreme risks they encounter mean they are likely not given valuable ships to secure materials with, and most likely only travel within material space having been deployed from a larger vessel. Void harvesters are similar in nature to shipbreakers. They work out in the darkness of the void, acquiring resources. But where shipbreakers are focused on the technology of mothballed ships, void harvesters seek to navigate among the remnants of destroyed planets, moons, other celestial bodies. They look to secure highly prized and rare resources amid the cosmic debris. These celestial scavengers venture into the cataclysmic heart of desolation, where the gravitational forces are unpredictable at best. An inexperienced captain and team leader could see their entire ship crushed while navigating between annihilated worlds or ancient anomalies. The remnants of apocalyptic battles as seen at the fall of Cadia leave a territory rich for salvage, but extremely hostile for working in. The very nature of this kind of speculative work thrusts them into the epicenter of void hazards, pitting them against not only the raw forces of the cosmos, but also very possibly the malevolent entities that dwell in the void. One of the core dangers faced by such harvesters is the unpredictable nature of the galactic remnants they traverse. These cosmic graveyards are filled with the debris of obliterated worlds, including razor-sharp shards of metal, toxic gases, and volatile energy fluctuations. Navigating through such a celestial minefield requires unparalleled skill and precision, as a single misstep can spell disaster. Just as with the shipbreakers, wreckage of ancient battles, remnants of alien technology, and the cosmic fallout from warp anomalies are constant threats that lurk in the shadows, waiting to claim the unwary. Not to mention the more ethereal dangers that exist out among the stars, the haunting whispers of lost souls, and the echoes of cosmic horrors lingering in the void, creating an eerie ambience aboard small crewed vessels that can fray the nerves of even the most battle-hardened individuals. Such crew members may often speak of the maddening isolation that accompanies their journeys at sublight speed. The cold emptiness of space amplifies the weight of their solitude, and the constant threat of unseen adversaries, which adds an edge of paranoia to their already troubled lives. The psychological toll exacted upon void harvesters is immeasurable. Unlike larger ships which contain some semblance of human civilization, those who are sent out into the darkness can spend weeks and months in the cold expanse of space, surrounded by little more than the remnants of obliterated worlds, and the darkness of space in M41 is rarely silent. The encroaching thoughts and twisted temptations, especially in areas which have suffered the ravages of unholy entities of the warp, could drive even the most resilient individuals to the brink of insanity. Altogether, the stress of their work and the dangers they face all are brought together in a mental crucible that tests the limits of human endurance. Many Void Harvesters speak of the haunting nightmares that plague their sleep, visions of cosmic abominations, and the tormented souls of those lost in the Void. Still, despite the overwhelming dangers and the toll it takes on their psyche, Void Harvesters are drawn to their perilous profession by the promise of unimaginable wealth and the lure of uncovering ancient mysteries. The resources they extract from the remnants of celestial bodies are highly sought after. The discovered possibilities are endless, a means by which to power the war machines of the Imperium. Forbidden technologies, rogue traders, and the nobility would pay any price to acquire, and heavy weapons lost drifting in space that are always of high value. Whether it's those recycling human remains upon a hive world, or shipbreakers out in the void making use of the remains of ancient battleships, the role of scavengers and those who would harvest the materials from between shattered planets themselves serve as the lifeblood of a galaxy locked in perpetual conflict. The Worst Jobs for Humanity series is always an interesting one, because we very often end up being far more focused upon the industrial and civilian roles of humans who serve at the behest of the faceless oppression of the Imperium and Adeptus Terror. In honesty, this is one of the most fascinating areas of the 40k galaxy to myself, and it's one of the least explored and documented within the lore, often only shared in fragments of offhand mentions that we must then make logical expansions upon to really understand them at all. The bleakness of life can be punctuated by the bizarre and the extreme, but it is this grinding hopelessness that really underscores life for humans in M41, and indeed the 40k galaxy itself. This is why the Administratum example is one of the most interesting to me, whilst technically seeming also one of the most boring, because they serve to retain extremely oppressive control over the citizens of hundreds of thousands of Imperial planets, worlds which may have forgotten their place, and who are brought back into line by some anonymous Administratum scribe far away on a world they will never see. I often see people speak about, well, why don't worlds rebel? Why don't they innovate? Why don't they try to break free from the shackles of the Imperium? This is human nature. It's inescapable. I think it's very clear why not, because the apparatus of the Imperium and the Administratum are so oppressively designed, so suffocating and inescapable and powerful, that no single world or even a single system has any hope of being anything other than a cog in the vast Imperial machine. Who do we have to thank for that? He still resides on Terra to this day and has done for 10,000 years. For in the galaxy of M41 and the Imperium of Mankind, where danger is as ubiquitous as the stars themselves, no matter how horrifyingly bleak or dangerous the tasks assigned to the servants of the Emperor, they must be carried out and obeyed without question. The only positive which can be clung onto is that we see in those who serve, they remain a testament to the indomitable spirit of humanity. Those who suffer through the perilous gulag of salvage, through the wastes of agri-world desolation, those who physically break themselves in service to the survival of the billions above them. The condemned who unknowingly enable the twisted and questionably necessary institutions to still exist, and those recovered from the clutches of horrors to enable the further understanding of the Xenos, embodies the undying pursuit of human knowledge, cultural wealth that humanity will never surrender, even in the face of cosmic horrors and an ever-looming threat of complete, total oblivion. For in M41, humanity continues to rage against the ever-dying light.